Across the country, adults with autism face difficulties finding housing, often languishing and on waiting lists for years. It's estimated that up to 500,000 children with autism will reach adulthood in this next decade. Finding workable solutions is becoming more and more of a challenge. Today, we talk about efforts to create more options. We'll talk with Cape Cod parents who've come together to create two different housing options for their children. But first, we talk with Catherine Boyle, president of Autism Housing Pathways, who joined us on the phone Tuesday afternoon. Welcome back to the program, Catherine.
Thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of the need. We see this, the numbers of young children with autism growing in our school system, giving us sort of an indication of how many of these children may be needing services when they become adults. So what is that sense of the need?
Well, I'll speak to Massachusetts numbers because they're what I'm most familiar with. I would say that over the next 20 years, we're looking at a good 13,000 individuals with autism reaching adulthood in Massachusetts. That actually may be a slightly low number. In terms of the number who will be able to live independently and afford housing on the open market, you're probably looking at about 20 people a year. So we're essentially looking at, 350 or so every year who are going to need affordable, supportive housing, who aren't going to be able to afford it on their own or receive it through DDF.
So families are caught in this dilemma of wanting to get their kids into as independent living situations as they can, and again, being able to afford that. So tell us a little bit about Autism Housing Pathways and what your role is.
Well, we're a statewide nonprofit, and we educate families about what their housing options are, essentially how to develop a housing strategy. Housing is not something that can be put together overnight, particularly if you're not funded through DDF. Generally speaking, it takes families 5 to 10 years to put together and implement a housing plan. If you hope to have your child living outside the family home by the age of 30, you really want to start working on it when they're about 18.
Mm. Now, you mentioned 22. The services that are available while your child is in school changes when that child reaches the age of 22.
Correct. So you are allowed to stay in special education until either the age of 22 or you accept a diploma, whichever one comes first. Therefore, to some extent, the numbers are a little hard to read because there are people who accept diplomas. What people need to be aware of is if your child graduates from high school, that's not necessarily a guarantee that they're going to be independent and self-supporting as an adult. It's a good sign, but the reality is that 80 to 90% of adults with autism are not employed, mm-hmm. which is different from the actual unemployment numbers because there are a lot of those folks who aren't considered to be in the workforce at all because they have given up looking.
So what are the options? You mentioned group homes, but there's adult foster care, adult family care, mm-hmm. Group adult foster care and personal care attendance services. So qualifying for these, you need to meet an institutional level of care for some of these state plan services, right?
Yes. The other one that should be mentioned here is shared living, which similar to group homes, you have to qualify for 24 residential through DDS. But shared living is different in that you're the individual is living with a family or other caregiver in that person's home or in the home of the person with a disability, but they have to live together. In terms of the state plan services, yes, those are, to back up a little, Medicaid is different in every state, and Medicaid essentially operates as a cafeteria plan. Each state decides what services they want to offer, and the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services sign off on it and say, yes, that's fine. So the services that are offered through the state plan are those cafeteria services per se. And what makes them different from DDS residential supports is that rarest of things in the adult world, an entitlement. If you qualify, they have to offer it to you. But qualifying, so for instance, for personal care attendance, you have to need physical assistance with three or more activities of daily living. And so that's things like toileting, ambulating, eating, bathing, hygiene, etc. So two or more for PCA, physical assistance with two or more for PCA. For adult foster care or adult family care, you either need to need prompting with at least one of those activities of daily living, or you need physical assistance with three of them, or you need physical assistance with two, plus there is a maladaptive behavior present. Mm. That's the criteria people need to meet.
Yeah, it's exhausting trying to figure out, you know, when you think about your dealing this as a family, it's exhausting to kind of figure out what your options are.
Absolutely, and that's a large part of what Autism Having Pathways does. We try to start people out with something we call the Turning 18 Checklist, which is a summary of things parents should do as their child is approaching 18, with web links on how to go about doing it. And then from there, we hope people will take advantage. We have free two-hour intro to housing workshops we call Thinking About Housing for people who are really ready to get down to it and start to develop a plan. We have day-long housing workshops. And we also have a tool on our website called My Benefits Generator that allows families to find out what MassHealth, that is Medicaid, plan services they're likely to be eligible for.
You know, we've mentioned DDS a couple times here and the eligibility requirements. And I know there's some parents who are frustrated because they could have an autistic child who is pretty severely autistic, but yet won't qualify under DDS regulations, right? Because it's sort of IQ-based, is that right?
Well, that has changed. Last year, the Autism Omnibus Bill was signed, and the effect of that was to remove IQ from the equation for people with autism, Smith-Magenis syndrome, and Prader-Willi syndrome. Simply having autism is not enough. You need to be functionally impaired in 3 out of, I believe, 7 functional skill areas, and it is, the good news is that some of those functional skills that can be impaired to count are pretty complex skills, so they can be things like handling medications or finances. So people are much more likely to qualify for services than they have in the past. However, for people who are quote-unquote newly eligible, in other words, for those with autism who qualify for services from the department who don't also have an intellectual disability, there is no money being budgeted right now for 24/7 residential. So, in other words, if individuals qualify as needing supports, they can either receive those in the family home, or if they have access to, you know, their own apartment or home, they can receive services there. The upshot of it really is that responsibility for bricks and mortar is falling more and more on families.
So what are your biggest challenges? What are you seeing as the biggest challenges right now?
Well, there are a few of them. One of them is that the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services came out with something they issued in early 2014. Something called the Final Rule on What Constitutes Home and Community-Based Services. And the intent of it is to prevent people from winding up in institutional settings. The way it is going to be enacted in different states is, to some extent, still up in the air. But it does make it difficult to have housing that is clustered. So, for instance, you know, 2, 3, 4 houses clustered together are difficult to get permission for through DDS. So that is one challenge. DDS is interested in using shared living as an alternative to group homes, which are somewhat less expensive, and then funnel the savings from that into family supports for people who are living, you know, with mom and dad, or who are living with an adult foster care provider. But the difficulty there is that the shared living model, while admirable in many ways, can produce what I call nomadism. So if you have an individual who's living with a shared living provider, and after 2 or 3 years that shared living provider doesn't want to be the provider anymore, the individual with a disability is going to need to move. And so you get these folks who have to move every 2 or 3 years, which, again, one of the ways around that would be if families were funding the real estate So where we come back is the fundamental challenge is how do you get families to be able to afford the real estate?
Yeah.
And there are a number of initiatives going on in that area, and some of it is also a matter of education.
Yeah.
One thing people are very interested in is the idea of adding an in-law apartment to their home. So if they could add a two-bedroom in-law apartment to their home, the individual could live there with an adult foster care provider. And the family would be right there to provide respite if necessary. And also, eventually, if the individual gets a Section 8 housing voucher, the family can then be the Section 8 landlord. And that voucher can help provide funds either to, you know, if there was a loan taken out, a home equity loan taken out to add on that apartment, or just to pay additional respite, for additional respite. But the challenge, of course, is that a lot of families can't afford to put on an addition to their house.
Right.
So for that reason, there's a bill that's in the state legislature right now, Senate 708, which would permit families to take loans from the state for the purposes of adding on an accessory apartment. And the bill has the potential to permit families to take that out at 0% interest with payment deferred for the life of the loan and potentially be extended indefinitely so long as it continues to be disability housing or senior housing. Families would be able to take out the lesser of $50,000 or half the cost of construction.
Now, we have a couple of projects I know you're familiar with here, Cape Cod Village in Orleans and the Forward Project in Dennis. What are your thoughts on those types of projects? We're going to talk about those in depth, but I know you're familiar with them. What are your thoughts?
Well, they're a really interesting model. The largest challenge they're going to face in terms of sustainability is going to be navigating the waters around the Home and Community-Based Services final rule. I'm watching with avid interest to see how that plays out. I think the goal for both of these projects is to essentially be a model for the future. It's going to be interesting to see the degree to which they will wind up being one-offs or which they will actually be replicable models. That's one of the biggest challenges we're facing is scalability, because it can take years and years and years to produce 4, 8, 12 units, and again we're facing 500 plus people a year turning 22, and I should say it's 500 this year. You know, in 2 years it's going to be over 700.
So, aside from these, are there other success stories in Massachusetts or elsewhere that might serve as models?
There's a couple of interesting things out there. One thing we're seeing is something that can be called transition programs. So an example of that would be 3L Place, which is in the Davis Square area of Boston. It's an urban living model. The idea there is a two-year program to train individuals in living skills, and hopefully at that point they'll be able to go on and live more independently. But even once they transition out of there, they're going to be facing some of these same affordability and support issues. So, again, it's going to come back to the family. The somewhat similar but a little more elaborate is something called First Place out of Phoenix, Arizona, which combines a transition program, plus they also have apartments. And the apartments are both for individuals with autism, but they are also housing for grad students, doctoral students, postdocs, and Teach for America volunteers, so that you've got that integrated population, which is really what they're looking for under the CMS rule. Some of this is going to come down to how the rule is interpreted. But other interesting models are out there. There's a group in Heidelberg, Pennsylvania, that just broke ground on a set of apartments. I believe it's 21 apartments for individuals with autism and 21 apartments for typically developing individuals. Another model that's going on that has more to do with individuals likely to be served by the department is a model that is sometimes called 22 at 20. There's a parent in central Massachusetts who was able to transition her son 2 years early into an adult residence that is owned by the family and is leased to a service provider who is funded through DDS. And that money is paid in rent to the family, which they use to pay the mortgage. Actually, they may have bought it out of pocket, but you could use it to pay the mortgage. And that's starting to be replicated by other families. Is a shared living model where the families control the real estate. Other things people are talking about doing are models where, you know, for a lot of families, what they have in terms of money is vested in their own homes. So it's possible that you can combine your child's independent living with your own downsizing. So you could sell your house and buy a two-family. You could sell your house and buy two condos in the same development, or they don't need to be in the same development. But, you know, those are options for people to be able to afford real estate. Another thing people need to be aware of is that there is a program through Fannie Mae, which is, you know, the national real estate lender, that allows family members, or actually it allows parents, to take out a loan at 5% down. They are trying to create a home for their adult child with a disability who can't qualify or afford a mortgage. And again, so it, the family is treated as owner-occupiers even though they won't be living in the property. And we know of at least one family that has done that and others that are pursuing it.
Catherine Boyle, president of Autism Housing Pathways. We'll put a link to your organization on our website, capeandislands.org. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with us.
Sure thing.
You're listening to The Point. We are discussing housing options for adults with autism. Joining us in studio is Kathy Oman, president of Forward, or Friends or Relatives with Autism and Related Disabilities. Welcome, Kathy.
Good morning, Mindy.
And on the phone, Bob Jones, co-founder of Cape Cod Village. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Kathy.
And also on the phone, Dan Fortier, Dennistown planner. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Now, Kathy and Bob, both parents of autistic children. And I think when you talk to parents who have adult children with autism, one of the biggest concerns is what will happen to my child when I'm gone. And so you are both examples of kind of taking this into your own hands. And what are we going to do? So, Kathy, let's start with your project, Forward. Where you're kind of in the beginning stages. Tell us a little bit about the project.
We are. Forward stands for Friends or Relatives with Autism and Related Disabilities. We are working with the very generous Town of Dennis and Housing Assistance Corporation. The Town of Dennis recently leased 4.9 acres of land to Hack and Forward to build duplex, two homes with four bedrooms each, to develop for people with autism and other developmental disabilities. So the lease was just granted this late in the summer, and we will start working with the town. We have initial design plans, and we anticipate working with the town and Hack to develop the plans, fundraise for a long time, and build these two buildings.
Yeah. So, Dan, the town of Dennis leasing this piece of property for the project. How did this come about? How did the town get involved?
Approached a few years ago, back when the two entities were working together to try to find a single location on the Cape for this type of housing. And so we started working with them, I'm going to say maybe 3 or 4 years ago, on trying to identify locations. We thought we came up with one, and then when we approached various other town staff people, it was suggested this site that's immediately across the street from the original one we saw might actually work a lot better, had a lot less constraints on it, and so we brought this particular site forward. But it's a project that is very important to the people of the town of Dennis. They recognize that there's a need for this type of housing and look forward to helping these people.
Yeah. And Bob, tell us the plan for Cape Cod Village and where you're at with your project.
Well, we're pretty far along right now, Mindy. We have our architectural drawings finished. We're starting site work on the project next week. And the project is located in the town of Orleans. It's dead center in the Tom Village, which is probably one of the key components of our program. It was part of our original design, was to have a project, you know, located in town where folks could walk to whatever they needed to get to. Also, we've had some success, wonderful success, with the town of Orleans. They've helped us with a large community preservation grant to purchase the land. So we are the actual owners of this four-acre parcel in the center of town.
And how many units are you planning, Bob, with your project?
We're sort of in the same place that Kathy and Forward are at, that we had originally, our original plan was to house 16 people in four separate units, but because of the final rule that Kathy Boyle spoke of earlier in this segment, we've had to kind of pull back a bit and look at developing our project in two phases. The first phase is going to be the construction of units for eight people. It'll be a duplex model, which is the preferred model by the Department of Developmental Services. And then we'll move into phase two after that's completed, and also after the final rule has had some changes made to it. We'll move into phase two after the completion of phase one. And there's also going to be on our project a what we call a commons building. And kind of the cool thing about the commons building is it's there to serve more than just the people on our site, but the larger autism community on the Capewide, on the Cape. You know, as a Capewide organization, we're concerned about what's happening to all of the people with autism in our community. So the Commons Building will be a resource center for folks in the community who are struggling with autism, whether themselves or with their family. And we're looking to get the Commons Building built during phase the first phase of the operation that I just described.
Yeah. And Kathy, you have something similar.
We have a
common area.
We have a phase two plan as well, that we'd like to build phase one and then see where the funding and, you know, the access to building. We have 4.9 acres, so there's room for another two buildings, and we'd like to have a common building as well. As Bob suggested, to facilitate community. I mean, the question here is, what is community for people with developmental disabilities, and how do you build it for them through a building like this for activities, dinners, dances? But also for us, I think, I see in the town of Dennis, we struggle to find meeting space, and we would invite the community in as well, and also facilitate taking people out to the community as they do in traditional group homes. But I see the community accessing a community building as well.
Yeah. And Dan, does that help with funding when you're looking at like community preservation funds or other types of funding, including the community as a whole? Does that help when you're looking at funding?
This, as a part of the Community Preservation Act funding, the housing is all qualified from the consultant we've worked with for affordable housing inclusion. So that was the biggest part of it.
Yeah.
Part of this project also, the area that is behind this is all water supply protection, and there are a number of trails that people use for walking and off-road bicycling.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of this project will include putting in a parking lot so that the public will have easy access in and out of these hiking trails, and will increase some of the interaction between the residents of this project and the residents of the town of Dennis.
Yeah. I want to ask Kathy and Bob the same question. One of the things, you know, we were talking about a lot, we heard Kathy, a lot of numbers, 500 adults with autism looking for housing this year, and a couple of 750, and we're talking about just a few units.
Small
it's got to be so frustrating because you've got these DDS regulations that you can't just go ahead and put up as many as you would like, right?
Right. We're struggling to build bedrooms for eight people, which it's a small project.
Yeah.
And the need is great.
Yeah, Bob, are you frustrated about that too?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's we feel like we've had our hand tied in, and we had developed this project a while back, long before this regulation, the CMS final rule, went into effect. So it kind of threw a monkey wrench in our plans. But along with Kathy, we've been meeting with some of our state representatives and state senator, and we're trying to jointly advocate for our programs so that they can exist in the expanded versions that we both had presented and that we have in mind. And again, I mean, 16 people on a site with two sites, the Forward site and our site, and that's a tiny, tiny number. So it's kind of disconcerting, you know, when you think about it, that here's a group of people community volunteers, family members who are willing to raise the money, do all the hard work of getting this housing built, and then running into regulations that kind of undo all of our efforts. So it's a head scratcher, Mindy.
Kathy, do you have, because you know, there's a lot of parents that are in your same situation, and I think we heard Kathy say earlier, when it comes to the bricks and mortars, it's kind of thrown onto the family. So right. Do you have a lot of families going, wait, what are you doing? Watching this thinking, well, maybe I want to try to do something like that?
Well, sure. I think both Bob and I get phone calls all the time from parents who are interested. What we see, you know, autism is a range. It's a spectrum disorder, so there's a range of behaviors and challenges and capabilities, from people who need traditional, who are very challenged and need traditional homes, to higher functioning people. And I hear a lot from those parents whose adult children are really struggling with work, as Kathy Boyle said, and not able to live on their own and struggling with that. Dan can speak to that in the town of Dennis. And there isn't funding for housing for that population right now, and we hope that changes in the future. You know, for people with children, adult children living at home, the isolation factor is huge. And after our kids are out of school, we saw this with our youngest child, that every day was a challenge to find something for him to do when he got home. Living with your peers changes that. Mm-hmm. In a supervised setting or a less supervised setting, which we're looking at. But living at home can be one of the most isolating situations for parents and adults with developmental disabilities.
Yeah, and you mentioned Dan might want to chime in on the need. Dan?
We see it tremendously. Every year we hear someone who's got a situation. We have approved in the past decade at least 70 single-room occupancy type of motel conversions. And in a lot of the situations, we have people who have essentially been virtually homeless, and a lot of them do have developmental disabilities who are living in these properties. They are unsupervised, and it's not always necessarily the safest place for them. And we see this as something that will provide a safe location for at least a small portion of the population that's currently here in town.
In greater supervision.
Yeah. And, of course, as we mentioned, the need is only growing. So how, going forward, and I guess, Bob, since your project's a little more farther along, how is this going to sustain itself going forward? I know you've raised money and you're at a certain point here, but talk about the sustainability of your project. And then, Kathy, I want to ask you the same thing.
Well, the sustainability is basically relies on funding through the Department of Developmental Services. Each person who would be living at Cape Cod Village would be on a Medicaid waiver. And we're dealing with our project, which is somewhat different from Forward's project, is we're dealing basically with people with severe autism, and we've kind of limited to that population. So people will come with a waiver from DDS. That waiver will pay for almost all of their service and living needs, and that is augmented by a contribution from each individual Social Security disability insurance, and also there's a very small contribution that will come through food stamps and a couple of other very, very minor federal and state programs. That keeps it going. On the other hand, what we've also dedicated ourselves to doing is to develop a foundation, and we'll probably call it Cape Cod Village Foundation. Okay. And that foundation is going to provide ongoing monies to continue the project, the Cape Cod Village project, and make sure that it's up to standard. And also, hopefully, it'll generate enough revenue to help other people move forward with developing housing for people with autism. And most of the money from the foundation is frankly going to come from families and parents of children with autism. We have a committed number of parents already who have set up special needs trust for their children to protect their assets, with the idea that the proceeds from those trusts will be given to the Cape Cod Village Foundation as a way of ensuring some continuity in the lives of their kids with autism, well, adults with autism.
Yeah. I think we're looking at something very similar. And I think what's, when you say what would be different about forward, or Cape Cod Village, as opposed to typical group homes, I think we would use foundation money or fundraised money to also supplement training and for staff people, which is another thing that's in great need. People, autism is a very specific disorder and with lots of behavioral problems, and staff training is essential for this population.
Yeah, well, one of the things too, I mean, there are some models out there that have the independent living with the community center, but they're really expensive, and I think affordability for parents with autistic children, as become adults, is a big issue. I mean, how they afford it, and Bob, as you're saying, with the DDS and SSI and some of those dollars, but there's a lot of parents who are really struggling with that.
One of the things I've said to people with a tongue in cheek is, I have a son with severe autism, and that's the good news and the bad news. The bad news is that I have a son with severe autism.
Yeah, right.
The good news is that because he has severe autism, he's going to be eligible for the Medicaid waiver funds that are going to ensure that he is going to get services.
Yeah.
But for the folks who don't fall into that category, it's
that middle ground.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Where do they go?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's we're looking more and more at that in Dennis. And as Bob said, we continue to work with the Department of Developmental Services to plead our case, I guess.
Yeah. And Dan, you probably see that, the I want to say young adults who are in that middle ground, they don't have the same access to services as somebody who's severely disabled. And I imagine you have a population you struggle with there in Dennis.
Oh,
as every other town does. Yeah.
We have had problems with people who are not necessarily homeless, but they don't have anything really to do during the day, who are on the spectrum. They just kind of wander around. Unfortunately, they wind up being police calls whether they're doing something or not. Mm-hmm. So giving them something to do, getting them into a structured program is far better for them than having them living in the proverbial parents' basement. The parents go off to work and leave them there with nothing to do all day.
Yeah.
And so we're hopeful that by creating this housing, hopefully we get all 16 units capable of being built. We create a structured program that serves part of that need, and hopefully as the need grows, maybe not this site, another location in town might become something for the ever-growing piece of that population.
Mm-hmm.
And the spectrum has so many different aspects to it, some that are able to work but need to have some limited supervision, and some that need significant supervision, and there's nothing for them right now. There is no support network that they can live independently within.
Yeah. Bob mentioned that his project is serving severely autistic. Yours is Friends of Autism and Related Disorders. So who's going to qualify for your...
Well, we'll have an application process. What we anticipate doing is contracting with a provider to provide services, and they would help us develop the application process. And there's a process to putting four people together in each of these houses and making a good fit. That's not often how it works these days. And in fact, in Massachusetts, as Kathy Boyle will tell you, someone has to die to get into a group home. That's how it works.
Yeah, no, the waiting lists are Bob, you're laughing because you know this is such a...
Well, I know it firsthand, and I'm sure Kathy does.
I do too.
I have a son that's in a group home, and I can tell you that the fit that has been put together there is about as dysfunctional a fit as you could imagine. I don't think they could have done a worse job of selecting wrong people to live together.
Yeah.
But, Mindy, I have a statement that I'd like to make.
Real quick, we only have about a minute left, Bob. Go ahead.
Okay, and I think I can do it because I know Kathy's group and our group keep getting asked to clarify some of the what they're about, what we're about. Are you the same group? Are you not the same group? So I've kind of put together a very quick statement that I want to use to address people, and hopefully they can then get a sense of who we are. So let me just say briefly, about 10 years ago, my wife, Lauren, who's the co-founder of CCV, and I, we began meeting with some parents in Boston where our son was in a residential school to discuss the future of our children, all of whom had severe autism. So out of these discussions came the concept of a small congregate neighborhood that would be located in a town center or in the community. What emerged from these conversations ultimately was the development of an organization called Sweetwater Spectrum that was built in Sonoma, California. It's a prototype project that was developed by members of this discussion group that I had talked about in Boston. So we went out, Lauren and I, after visiting the folks at Sweetwater Spectrum in 2011. We were enthused about what we saw and heard.
Bob, I hate to cut you off, but we were like running up against the clock. But I'm going to put links to both your websites on our website,
CapeandIslands.org,
so that you can get more information about both projects. Dan Fortier, Dennis Town Planner, thanks for joining us. Bob Jones and Kathy Oldham, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of WCAI, the local NPR station for the Cape, the Coast, and the Islands.